going to happen now is that the next two papers are merging or going into close proximity with each other, okay? At this point, I am going to abdicate my role as chairman. We are going into a self-policing situation where I will come in at 1:35 and say it is now finished. All right, so this
no,
is...
No, sorry.
We have 1 hour from now.
No, well, it's not 1:35. It is 15 to 1 now. It is 20 minutes each plus 10 minutes each of discussion that is... An hour.
By my clock, my clock's well, 10 minutes past. I meant to say my clock is 10 minutes past. Well, so we have 1 hour from now. It is an autonomous, self-policing area of immaterial values. I will leave you in the tender hands of Emma Dowling, who will present her paper and just announce the title to save me having to read my piece of paper there.
Okay, well, I'm not actually going to announce the title because I'm going to go straight into it because time is something that I'm very used to having to keep. Obviously, being a waitress, I've got 2 hours to get through the guest experience. Now I've only got 20 minutes. So I want to imagine you all to imagine yourselves dining in the restaurant right now and sit back, relax. So welcome. Welcome to Asia to Cuba. Tavi, have you ever dined here with us before? No? Okay. Well, let me explain the concept of the restaurant. Food here is a combination of Latin American and Asian food and spices put together in the dishes for you. So you can experience elements of both cuisines at the same time. Fusion food, globalization, you know how it is. The food is intended for you to share because we like to bring in some traditional family values in our restaurant. So all the dishes come out at the same time, as and when they're ready, they're put in the middle of the table for you all to share, as if you were like one big family. It's great. Portions are rather large, though, so don't order a dish each, because obviously you've got to share, because that's part of the experience. So pick something from the menu. I'm here to help. I can explain everything about the dishes, because I've received extensive training on everything. If you have any dietary requirements in at all, nut allergies, anything like that, let me know and I'll let the chef know so they can cook your individualized meal for you. So, as I said, sit back and relax. If you would like a cocktail before dinner, then obviously I can explain everything about the cocktails to you too. We've got caipirinhas, for example. It's, what is it? I've even forgotten. It's crushed limes with crushed mint as well, mixed with ice, and obviously you've got some Havana Club rum in there too, garnished with a sprig of mint because it's actually a mojito, not a caipirinha. And we also have obviously a selection of wines which I can recommend to you as well. My particular favourite is the Chardonnay from Chile actually. It's got a really lovely caramelly kind of feel to it. I love it. It's really, really great. So anyway, I'm going to leave you to it because I obviously keep talking too much, but if you do have any questions at all, then please don't hesitate to ask me. That was it. Right, well, what I was doing there was basically my job. That's what I had to do as a waitress working at the restaurant that I worked. What I want to talk about here is pretty much how this type of effective labour, as I see it as effective labour, is sort of fits into the immaterial labour thesis. And what I particularly want to pick up on is how capital attempts to control my subjectivity within that process, but also not just controlling my subjectivity, actually seeks to actively construct the nature of my work and also measures that work quite considerably in all sorts of ways. I also want to talk about how in this labour, we can't take for granted that we're producing in some kind of commons that where capital is an external element to that. We have to think about how capital is internal to that labour process, and that is something that I really want to draw out as well. And particularly, I also want to say something about how this labour in itself can't be understood as outside of all of the other material forms of labour that I myself do as an immaterial worker, but also all the other types of material work that other people are doing in that labour process, of which my labour doesn't stand outside of. So those are the things I really want to pick up on here. And particularly, my biggest question, having worked in this industry for about 10 years, is what's the political significance of this? I mean, wherever I've worked as a waitress, there's no trade unions, there's no self-organization, there's no questioning of capitalism, because actually also the waiters are the ones that are earning pretty good money. I'll talk a little bit about that as well if I have enough time. So What is the political significance of this? And if we're talking about immaterial labour, an effective work is part of that immaterial labour, then how do we talk about something beyond capitalism? Okay. So what was peculiar about this place where I worked in particular was that the way that affect was supposed to organise not only my work towards the guests, but also the relationships between all of the workers there. We received extensive training on things like the 5-10 rule. So when I'm walking towards somebody, when they're at 10 metres, I smile, make eye contact. When I'm at 5 metres, I say hello to them. That goes for guests, that goes for management, that goes for the pot washer, that goes for everybody in the place. Another thing was core values. So you have the core values of the company, which are copyrighted by the ethical guru of the company, who's the previous owner, who copyrighted his 7 core values, which are supposed to, again, regulate not only the interaction between the customer and the waitress and all the workers, but also between the workers. That's supposed to be how we're to relate to one another. So I think one of the things that's changed today is the way that the service work itself has become central to the overall restaurant process, whereas even 10 years ago when I started working as a waitress, obviously the service element was there, but it wasn't really focused on at all, whereas today that's where capital is getting its profit from. That's where particularly restaurants at the high end, where I worked was a really prestigious organization which catered to the celebrities and the politicians. I got to serve lots of diplomats and Madonna and Robert De Niro and all the rest of them. But that's where they're getting their edge from. That's precisely it, because that's what they're competing for. They're not competing for nice food or wine. You can get that anywhere. It's the individualized guest experience that matters. And what is particularly interesting, I find the particular company that I worked for, they called their guest experience the edge, which was engaging, dynamic guest experience. So from the moment when the guest sat down, this engaging, dynamic guest experience would start. I had 2 hours, like I said, to go through the whole sequence of service, 25-point plan, a script that I had to go through, automated. So on the one hand, this work is relying on me being myself, using my social skills that I've learned throughout my life. But on the other hand, it's automating my work. It's providing a script for me. And it's repetition. I turn myself off at work. I mean, at times you enjoy yourself. You know, you meet somebody interesting. You set up a bit of a rapport. But actually, you're going through the motion again and again and again and again, day in, day out, following the script. So let me just tell you quickly what the core values are. Gracious, attentive, authentic, which means I have to really mean it. Fun, friendly, accountable, and original. And it's interesting also in the literature of the company, the founder, the ethical guru of this company also says that he wants his restaurants to be like theatre, an act. Yeah, it's the experience, the performance. But we're supposed to really mean it, though, at the same time. Funny contradiction there. And the one of the most important things for this is also that we have to enjoy ourselves while we do it. Have fun and make money, the other company slogan. So one of the things that I really want to talk about is also this active subjectivity. And Lazzarato talks about this in his article, about how we are also supposed to become part of the restaurant. We're supposed to participate actively in the managing of this process. Being original also means questioning management and their decisions, having daily briefings and discussing what's going wrong in the restaurant, what part of the machine needs rigging to make some more profit. Those are the kinds of discussions that we had. And obviously, this kind of process in itself produces the kind of subject that is going to be willing to participate in this process. But this process is also backed up by force, because if you don't participate, you're not going to really last very long in the job. So I think that's a really crucial point that we need to think about how this process of active subjectivity works. But we also have to think about beyond the mere domination of capital, where we understand ourselves as producing these social relations and capital coming along and just extracting the value from that. We also have to think about how capital actually actively intervenes to put an objective value on that and measure it. So one of the things about measure that I wanted to tell you about is mystery dining. Now, mystery dining is something that happened at the restaurant I worked once a month, I'd say, where diners, who obviously they're a mystery, we don't know that it's actually happening, they come in and they evaluate the dining experience. So they have, I always used to think they recorded it, but apparently they don't, because I kicked up a fuss about the fact that surely people should be telling me whether they're going to record me or not. I mean, that happens in political meetings. But anyway, I think they just take notes under the table or something, I don't know. But they have a whole list of things, because they have the 25-point plan that I've learnt off by heart, and they then tick off the boxes of whether I've done that. So did I tell them about the special cocktail of the month? Did I take the order within 2 minutes of them, or did I come to the table within 2 minutes of them sitting down? 2 minutes, very important, timekeeping. Did I say goodbye to them and invite them to come back to the restaurant at the end of the dinner? Absolutely, I fail on that one, so I got 99% the time that I had a mystery dine. I forgot to ask them to come back. But anyway, so, and all of this whole process is then set out in correlation matrices and graphs and measuring exactly what time everything happened, the sort of sequence of service and the time that it all happened. It also then constructs obviously a 100%. So what is the ideal measurement is the 100% if you fulfill everything. And then it also compares that to other workers who have been measured before me. And it also compares that to other restaurants that are part of the same chain. So it looks, well, how well is X restaurant doing over here in comparison to this experience? So it's actively constructing all of these measures in order to put that objective value on my work. Okay. And about wage relations, I think that's another way that this measure comes into play. Now, the way that we're paid is you have a basic shift pay. You also have the service charge, which is, I think, 10 to 15% is usually the norm that is put on the bill at the end, added on to the bill at the end. And you as a guest can opt out of that if you feel that the service wasn't up to the measure that you expected. That means I perform all the labor, but in the end I don't get paid for it, because I didn't do it as well as you had hoped that I would have done it for you. So there is this setting up of a measure whereby I have to conform to certain standards and provide a certain service, and then if you're not happy with it, or if it doesn't live up to anything or if you're just a bastard and you can't be actually bothered to pay the money, then you can also opt out of it. I can't do anything about it. Another thing about that is tips, gratuity. So you also give me a cash gift at the end of the meal. If you particularly enjoyed yourself, or if you just wanted to show your solidarity with me, that you think I'm in a poor paid position and you want to give me some money because, I don't know, maybe you want to settle your conscience, or maybe you're a political activist, I don't know. Or it's just a social norm. You know, you do that because that's what is customary, that is what is expected. And actually, I looked into the empirical research on tipping, and the statistical evidence is that there is absolutely no correlation between service expectation and tipping. People don't tip because of good service. They do it for other reasons. But it's used as the motivating factor by management to get you to perform in certain ways according to what they want you to do. And so that is the motive, and that is where we earn our most of our money. We make huge amounts of money. In high-class places like that, we made loads of money with our tips. We depend on that. But it is a direct collusion between the guest and management as a form of indirect control and measure over how I do and how I perform. So again, it's really crucial. But in this, obviously, there's always the hierarchy. We talk about immaterial labour as being sort of network forms. We talk about that also in relation to particularly the cyborg aspect of immaterial labour, this communication technology. That's the thing that's always coming up. But when we look at this particular form of labour, there's no network there at all. It's completely hierarchical, chain of command. I have no freedom whatsoever. I might enjoy my work from time to time, but that's beside the point. I don't have any power in this process. And whereas I don't have any power, there are people in this restaurant that have a lot less power than me. These are the people who are in the kitchen, who are cleaning the dishes, who are cleaning the floor, who are cleaning the rooms in the hotel. They're the people that are coming from Eastern Europe, from Africa. I don't know about their particular employment contract because I didn't interview any of them on that specifically. We've had personal conversations, but there is precarity there. Whereas I was on a stable, full-time, permanent contract. I wasn't precarious at all, and neither was anybody else that worked with me on that level. We were pretty predominantly white, predominantly middle class, predominantly well-educated, and predominantly only doing this before becoming academics, media people, lawyers, etc., etc. We're doing this as an intermediary step to something else. Whereas the kitchen porter may be also doing that, but probably not. And why? For what reason? So I think then, you know, if we consider the aggregate worker, in sort of Marxian language, then we have to consider how this labor process as a whole and its stratification, like we were talking about yesterday, how does this all fit together? And how does this fit together when we're talking about effective and immaterial labor? I think there was a lot of kind of, there's no big resistance, no big kind of ideas of beyond capitalism in the workplace where I was. There's pretty much the idea, well, there is no alternative. This is what we're stuck with. And yeah, we don't believe this bullshit that these people are telling us, but we do it because we want the money. We have to work. That's kind of, I mean, everybody here is going to be familiar with that. But I think if there was any resistance beyond, you know, not taking off your jewelry when you're supposed to, or these sort of forms of micro-conflictuality that come up every day in the workplace, then I would say one of the most important things was when fellow colleagues came to dine in the restaurant, then everybody, floor management, waiters, bar staff, would like shower them with lavishly with free food and make sure they had the absolute best time. I mean, I remember we ate there once. I think we spent hundreds of pounds, but we didn't spend any money. We had champagne and cocktails and wine and loads of food, and everybody made sure we had an absolutely fabulous time. Now, I think that, in a sense, could maybe be said to be a moment of resistance, maybe reclaiming of the restaurant or whatever, but it's hardly beyond capitalism. So I think that is the question that I want to end with, is what are we going to do about this, and how does this fit into the kinds of conversations we're having here?
No, baby, it failed. No. You imagine.